Good morning, everybody. We're looking forward to next weekend, the great seminar on Saturday morning and on microaggressions. And then I'm looking forward to laying hands on Brian for his ordination as a pastor, a lifelong pastor, on Sunday night. I hope you make plans for that. As we promised you last week, today we're beginning a three-week series called Uprooting Loneliness. A while back, I began to notice a number of studies were coming out and reporting that there was a significant increase in loneliness in many populations in our culture. And I suggested to the pastors, I said, I think we need to talk about this because there are some help from the Bible that we can offer people who are dealing with loneliness in their own lives or in the lives of those around them that they can offer help to. And I was eager for us to address this after Easter, and so that was the source of our idea to spend the next 3 weeks on uprooting loneliness. And today I want to talk about the seeds of loneliness. There's some who describe what's going on as an epidemic of loneliness. That's something that's viral, that's going through the culture in an uncontrollable way. The official simple definition of loneliness is this perceived social isolation, where you're feeling cut off relationally from other people, and that is the phenomenon that's increasing. We are all made with a deep longing to be connected, to belong. And I think that's why loneliness feels so bad. It's deep within our nature. It's innate for us to want to be connected. And we're afraid of missing out. You're familiar with the acronym FOMO, fear of missing out, which is pervasive through our culture today. It's becoming intensified, not just in our culture, but the report says in every society in the world, loneliness increases as modernization increases in a society. As a society becomes less connected relationally to social groups, one of the symptoms of that is just increased media consumption, for example. So last September, the New York Times presented their perspective on this in an article on September 16th, 2018, excuse me, and the title of the article was simply that, An Epidemic of Loneliness. Now we have, among us today, I think we have five generations of people represented here. And I want you to see if you can guess which generation is experiencing the greatest increase in loneliness. And you're probably saying, I'm sure it's my generation. I'm sure it's the people that are around me, but let me just get your, we'll go back over the last five generations. How many of you think that the increase in loneliness is greatest among what they call the silent or the greatest generation from 1925 to 1945? Anybody think that's the generation, the biggest increase in loneliness? Okay, a number of you. The next one after the greatest are the boomers. How many of you think that the boomers are experiencing the greatest increase in loneliness? A few of you. How about Gen Xers? How many think it's Gen X that is experiencing most loneliness increase? Okay. How about millennials? Number of millennials. Okay. Number of you think it's among the millennials. Well, then finally, the most recent generation, the generation is variously called to by different names, but Generation Z is one description of it. That's those people born in 1998 to 2005. How many think it's that generation? Well, all of them are experiencing increases in loneliness. But the greatest increase is in Generation Z, teenagers. A study by the Cigna Insurance Company says that right now, 54% of Americans feel so lonely that they say this, quote, no one actually knows them well. Over half of the population says, nobody knows me that well. I have acquaintances. We'll describe this a little bit more in a minute. But the study revealed that Generation Z, those born between 98 and 2005, were ranked as the loneliest generation, and the second loneliest is the generation right before them, the millennials. San Diego State University, some researchers there wrote this about Generation Z. The percentage of high school seniors who said they often felt lonely increased 26%, from 26%, excuse me, in 2012 to 39% in 2017. Extreme loneliness increasing from 26 to 39% of high school seniors. Of course, it's also greatly increasing among seniors that the silent generation, frequently among people with disabilities. And one interesting subcategory of people where loneliness is often appears is suburbanites, people who live in low-density suburbs and don't drive. Americans, whether you're a recent immigrant or you've been here your whole life, you call yourself an American, we report more loneliness than any other country in the world. Now, part of the reason we report that is we have more researchers here than anywhere else in the world. So I that's a caveat there, I don't know. But we do report to being more lonely than anywhere else. The American Sociological Review said this. 19% of Americans say they have only one confidant. What is their definition of confidant? Someone with whom you spend free time or you discuss important matters. 19% says, I have one. And for most of those, it's their spouse. And if they lose their spouse for one reason or another, they've lost their only confidant. Almost 20% of the population. In 1985, the average in all of our population, people reported that they had three confidants in 85. In 21 years, that number has shrunk to two by 2006. The average number of three confidants now, it's, well, 2006 is, of course, 13 years ago. It had dropped to two. I don't know, maybe going even lower now. And in that same period, the number of people saying, I have zero confidants. The number of people with whom I can spend my free time or talk about important things has increased from 10 to 25%. One-fourth now say, there's nobody I can talk to. Nobody knows me. Nobody understands me. One last factoid that I thought was particularly relevant for those of us in Chicago. The researchers tell us that those people with long daily commutes to work also experience an increase in feelings of loneliness. And Chicago is number 7 on the list of the worst commutes, with an average round-trip commute of 89 minutes a day. That's part of that modernization I talked to that increases the sense of loneliness. Finally, and now this one's dear to my heart, troubling to my heart, I would say, men report more loneliness than women. So that's not too surprising to some of you. But the Sociological Review I mentioned ago said that heterosexual men have the fewest friends of anyone in America. The Boston Globe came up with a great line, I thought. The biggest health threat to middle-aged men isn't smoking or obesity. It's loneliness. Chronic loneliness, the brain scientists tell us, increases the production of the deadly stress hormone cortisol. So the most endangered species group in our major group in our society, according to the Boston Globe, is heterosexual men who have the fewest friends of anybody. Now, the sad trade-off, and one of the reasons for that last statistic, is that dads today, thank God, are investing more time in helping care for their children. 3 times more time invested in their children than the dads of previous generations. But that usually comes with a trade-off that they spend corresponding less time with either even few friends. So they may be more connected to their children, but they don't have people they can share what's going on with me and who know them. The words of Psalm 25 seem so true today, verse 16. Turn to me, The psalmist cries out to God, "Have pity on me. I am lonely. I am lonely." This translation says oppressed. Another translation says afflicted. Loneliness decreases our ability to function well, physically, emotionally, and it actually feels like an affliction. I am lonely and oppressed or afflicted. Have mercy on me. Turn to me, O Lord. Well, as I said at the beginning, I wanted to talk about this because I believe the Bible helps us in uprooting the loneliness that many of us are experiencing today. I want to take you one of my favorite biblical stories, which is a story of loneliness. And rather than reading it this morning, I found a film adaptation, word for word, from the Good News Bible, of a story of loneliness that we find in the Gospel of John, chapter 4. Let us watch it together.
The Pharisees heard that Jesus was winning and baptizing more disciples than John. Actually, Jesus himself did not baptize anyone, only his disciples did. So when Jesus heard what was being said, he left Judea and went back to Galilee. On his way there, he had to go through Samaria. In Samaria, he came to a town named Sychar, which was not far from the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired out by the trip, sat down by the well. It was about noon. A Samaritan woman came to draw some water.
"Give me a drink of water."
His disciples had gone into town to buy food.
"You're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan. So how can you ask me for a drink?"
Jews will not use the same cups and bowls that Samaritans use.
"If you only knew what God gives and who it is that is asking you for a drink, you would ask him. And he would give you a life-giving water."
"Sir, you don't have a bucket and the well is deep. Where would you get that life-giving water? It was our ancestor Jacob who gave us this well. He and his children and his flocks all drank from it. You don't claim to be greater than Jacob, do you?"
"Those who drink this water will get thirsty again. But those who drink the water that I will give them will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give them will become in them a spring, which will provide them with life-giving water and give them eternal life."
"Sir, give me that water. Then I will never be thirsty again. Nor will I have to come here to draw water."
"Go and call your husband and come back."
"I don't have a husband."
"You are right when you say you don't have a husband. You've been married to 5 men, and the man you live with now is not really your husband. You have told me the truth."
"You are a prophet, sir. My Samaritan ancestors worshipped God on this mountain. But you Jews say that Jerusalem is the place where we should worship God."
"Believe me, woman. The time will come when people will not worship the Father either on this mountain or in Jerusalem. You Samaritans do not really know whom you worship. But we Jews know whom we worship, because it is from the Jews that salvation comes. But the time is coming, and is already here, when by the power of God's Spirit, people will worship the Father as he really is, offering him the true worship that he wants. God is Spirit, and only by the power of his Spirit can people worship him as he really is."
"I know that the Messiah will come, and when he comes, he will tell us everything."
"I am he. I who am talking with you."
At that moment, Jesus' disciples returned, and they were greatly surprised to find him talking with a woman. But none of them said to her, "What do you want?" or asked him, Why are you talking with her? Then the woman left her water jar and went back to the town.
Come and see the man who told me everything I've ever done. Could he be the Messiah?
So they left the town and went to Jesus. In the meantime, the disciples were begging Jesus, "Teacher, have something to eat." But he answered,
"I have food to eat that you know nothing about."
So the disciples started asking among themselves, "Could somebody have brought him food?"
"My food is to obey the will of the one who sent me and to finish the work he gave me to do. You have a saying, 4 more months and then the harvest. But I tell you, take a good look at the fields. The crops are now ripe and ready to be harvested. The one who reaps the harvest is being paid and gathers the crops for eternal life. So the one who plants and the one who reaps will be glad together. For the saying is true. Someone plants, someone else reaps. I have sent you to reap the harvest in a field where you did not work. Others work there, and you profit from their work."
Many of the Samaritans in that town believed in Jesus because the woman had said, "He told me everything I have ever done." So when the Samaritans came to him, they begged him to stay with them, and Jesus stayed there 2 days. Many more believed because of his message, and they told the woman, "We believe now, not because of what you said, but because we ourselves have heard him, and we know that he really is the Savior of the world." After spending 2 days there, Jesus left and went to Galilee, for he himself had said, "Prophets are not respected in their own country."
What a truly amazing story of an encounter with someone who never expected to meet a holy Jewish man who would talk to them. Actually, as I was watching that again, for I don't know how many times, the look on her face when he speaks truth into her, it just sent chills in my spine again. The person who finally is no longer alone, no longer unknown. A thirsty, lonely woman. It says she came at noon. That's not the time in that culture where you typically went to gather water at the well. You went early in the morning. She went at noon because to avoid contact with all the other women in the community who were collecting their water in the morning, because she had been ostracized. She had a very complicated marital history, I guess you could put it. And she was alone without friends, thirsty in every way imaginable. And from the story of the five husbands and then the one she's living with now, it sounds like this hunger to be connected, to belong, led her to, as we say today, look for love in all the wrong places. You know what that's like? You've seen that? This woman epitomizes that, I think. Out of her hunger and thirst to be known, to get beyond that loneliness, to belong. And then she meets the most unexpected person a Samaritan woman would, in her situation, would ever meet. A morally upright person who would usually not connect with her, to speak to her. A male who happens to be Jewish, and the Jews don't mix well with the Samaritans, we are told in the story. And then, as he begins talking, it's clear that he's not just a Jewish male. He is one that has incredible, supernatural, prophetic insight. And he speaks to the secrets of her life and speaks them out loud. And then before he finished, this is the first time and the only time for chapters that he actually reveals to her, "I am the Messiah." She gets this whole package in one conversation. She is shocked by it. She is transformed by it. She is changed because someone notices her. She is seen. She is listened to. She is cared for. She's offered everlasting living water. And she feels totally understood. You know my whole story, don't you? And it isn't just the facts that you know. From the look on her face, they did a good job of depicting. She feels totally known all the way through her. Someone totally gets me. Someone totally connects with me. I belong, and he is offering me a connection where I am the most disconnected person in my town. I love how the message translates verse 39 of that chapter. It says, he knew all the things I did. He knows me inside out. This is why I find help for us in our loneliness. We can experience what this woman experienced in an encounter with Jesus, who totally knows us. He sees us. He listens to us. He cares for us. He knows us inside out, and yet he's not rejecting. He cares for his favor upon her. He's got promises for her. Isn't that what everyone who is experiencing loneliness is looking for? And not only that, one woman's transformation, after she got connected to Jesus, it led to many in her town becoming connected with Jesus and themselves being transformed. The thirsty, lonely woman experienced the refreshment of an overflow of streams of living water, and then she led many others to the same refreshment. What a picture and story of uprooting loneliness. Let me just clarify a few contrasts about loneliness here. In terms, there's obviously a difference between being lonely and being alone. A person can be alone and not feel lonely. Even though there is no one around, that person is not lonely because they just don't have any desire for social interaction at the moment. I'd like to be alone, you know. Some of us have those moments where I'm not feeling lonely. I'm feeling way too many people around me right now. So there's a difference there. What makes a person lonely is the fact that they need more social interaction or a certain type of interaction that isn't currently offered to them or available to them. You can be in the middle of a party and feel lonely, right? Maybe nobody wants to talk to you. Solitude also, it has benefits to it. There's times to seek out solitude. It has positive effects. It can produce positive growth experiences spiritually and otherwise. So there's a difference between alone and being lonely. Also, I want to clarify, there's a difference between different kinds of loneliness. There's what we call transient loneliness, the people who research this, which is a fancy way of saying it's based on a particular situation and time that will change, perhaps. And then there's chronic loneliness. Transient or transitional, it's like a 10-year-old going to summer camp for the first time. That homesick feeling, I want to be home right now. It's going to change. It may change when they meet the other people and they like them there at camp, or at least it'll change when they get home in 2 weeks. Or the experience of some college freshman. Then you have issues like divorce or death. Now, those could be transient experiences of loneliness. But for some people, it becomes chronic after they've lost somebody in death or gone through a divorce, or your parents go through a divorce, and you end up feeling lonely for a long time, and it becomes chronic. Many experience chronic loneliness where they stop having any feelings of attachment. A person who feels lonely, chronically lonely, is lonely regardless if they're at a family gathering, if they're around friends, or even when they're alone, they are experiencing chronic loneliness. It doesn't matter what's going on in the environment, but it's an experience that is always there. Those who study attachment and loneliness a great deal say that there's a certain percentage of us, a significant percentage of us, that may be experiencing our loneliness because, this was a study a few years ago, 1999, it said somewhere between 35 and 45% of babies, infants, fail to experience a secure attachment with their mothers. almost between 35 and 45% live with a sense, I never really got that feelings of attachment from the very beginning. And I've lived my life with the sense of detachment and loneliness. Well, I want to emphasize this morning, the reason I want to bring this message is the Bible says there is solutions to every kind of loneliness in Jesus. The Bible presents us a real alternative to living in loneliness. And it offers us the possibility that every one of us can become securely attached to Jesus. Securely attached to Jesus is what he offered. He offered that woman, and we saw it on her eyes, in her eyes when she felt that attachment. I love it. When you feel securely attached, the brain scientists can even do it. They can hook up those electrodes to your parts of your brain and whatever, and they can tell that there are, when people are feeling securely attached, there's parts of their brain that light up. You know what part of your brain lights up when you feel securely attached? The part of your brain where pleasure is found. You experience a sense of pleasure when you feel that attachment. When we experience this kind of connection with someone, it brings pleasure and joy. And Jesus is the ultimate antidote to our experience of loneliness for you and your friends. Having an encounter with Jesus where you experience connection with him can actually trigger parts of your brain that have been idle. I'm securely attached to Jesus like this woman. It looks this way. When we look for Jesus, we actually find him. We ask for him and we feel his presence. And when we find him, as opposed to some of the ways we've been taught, we don't feel that he's upset with us. In fact, when we find him, we find that he's happy to see us. And when Jesus is happy to see us, that lights up a lot of things. When we find him, he's happy to see us. Let me say it this way. It's not that Jesus has my solutions for my loneliness. Jesus is my solution. Jesus himself offers himself to be the solution to our loneliness. And even if you get separated from him, thank God he always welcomes us right back and we can get back together with him again. Whatever we've done that separates us, we can get back and reconnected and experience, I'm happy with you. I'm pleased with you. I want to be with you. And again, it triggers that sense of being connected. I'm not missing out. I'm being connected to the best person there ever was to be connected to, who knows how to give me living water, as it tells us in that story. If you're taking notes today, I want to end with descriptions of six biblical promises which are indicators of the signs of connection that Jesus offers you and I. And maybe you want to review this list. Maybe you want to share this list with somebody else. There's six scriptures here in which Jesus offers connection to the lonely. Jesus, who knows us from the inside out, brings these experiences to us because of him knowing us so well. John 6:4-39 is the passage where he says, he understands me. He gets me. How many people would say, I just want one person to really get me? Jesus is your solution. He gets you. He knows you inside out. John 4:39. Here are the six scriptures and the six signs of connection that come, that Jesus offers to us. The first one simply is, I feel seen. I feel recognized. The woman's at the well at a time where she doesn't want to be seen, but Jesus, she's kind of doing her work and ignoring him, and then he turns and he looks at her, he speaks to her. She says, I feel seen. We each feel this deep need to be just noticed. And the lover of our soul, Jesus, loves to see us. Psalm 33, as you see on the screen. The Lord's eyes are on those who fear him. His eyes are on us. We are seen. Secondly, verbal people like me, you know what we most want even more than being seen? People talk as much as I do. I want somebody to listen. I feel heard. How many of us want to feel heard? We try to those closest people in our lives, even our confidants, and we walk away and say, they didn't get me. They didn't understand. I spoke, but I don't think they heard it. Well, they're just human. But Jesus is more than that. And with Jesus, I feel heard. Psalm 116, I love the Lord. Why? Because he hears my voice. My pleas for mercy. I am heard when I get connected with Jesus. These another facet, it's like a diamond here. Another facet of this is if I'm seen and I'm heard, that's another indicator that I feel understood. Do you have that longing in you? Somebody gets me. I feel understood. Our brain, our emotions, our spirit, our bodies, they are all longing to be known. And David the psalmist in the famous Psalm 139 puts it this way. You are familiar with all my ways. I am totally understood by the God of the universe and his son Jesus. I am fully understood. You get all of my ways. My closest friends, my wife and my children, and they don't get it all the time. And they especially don't like my dad jokes, you know. But somebody understands me. I feel understood. And then I feel the fulfillment of when Jesus says, I am always with you. I feel you are with me. It's possible for you to have the existential experience of feeling Jesus with you, connected to you. We want someone to be with us when we're going through everything we're going through. And that was one of the final promises Jesus gave in Matthew 28. Remember, I am what? Always with you. Just today? No. Until the end of time. I am with you. We desperately, you and your friends, your family, desperately need to feel that God is with them and Jesus is with them. Two more before I finish today. I feel cared for. Recognize that feeling? When Jesus comes to those of us that are lonely, he also communicates, I care about what you're experiencing. Peter tells us, 1 Peter 5, it's on the screen, turn your anxiety over to God. I'm sure all of us have some of that stuff. What does he say? Turn it over to God. Why should you go to the trouble of giving your anxiety to God? Because he cares for you. It matters to him what you're going through. He cares about it, so give it to him. The last one. This one, I think, is really special, and this really ties into that pleasure center in the brain. And this one, I find many of us have a hard time believing. We think that God will put up with us. He'll take us back when we've messed up, that he'll tolerate us, that, you know, we're okay with him. I think there's a commercial about, you know, you want your doctor to be more than just okay. You want your God to be more than just okay with you. Jesus is more than okay with you, let me tell you right now. I love this verse. Write this down. Memorize it if you need to. I feel enjoyed. The Lord delights in those who fear him. Do you know what it's like to feel like somebody actually enjoys you? Jesus does. He delights in you. That's the ultimate antidote to loneliness, is feeling, hey, he delights in me. I'm an object of his favor. This frees us from having to desperately look for approval from everybody else. You see people who are doing that all the time. They're just running around trying to get favor, approval from everybody else, and it usually comes from a deficit here. That the greatest and most important voice in the universe, they've not heard him say, hey, I delight in you. That's my prayer for all of you this morning. That you would experience these six dimensions, these six facets of what it means to be truly connected to Jesus and attached to him. Let me ask the band to come up for a final song. Thank God my memory's still good. I can remember when I was 18. in a couple of years, I might not. Who knows? But I can remember when I was 18, and I went through my first crisis of loneliness. Now, for financial reasons, I was unable to make any college visits. People today just think that's crazy. You went to a college you never even went to see? I saw the brochure. That's crazy today, isn't it? No, I didn't get to, I couldn't afford to go to one college visit. It was all, and there was no internet, of course. You wrote and got a printed brochure. And I end up being accepted at a great New England college that was 1,300 miles away from my home. Now, my formative years were spent growing up in the western United States, and I had never even traveled east of central Indiana. That was east to me. Now I know folks on the East Coast, they think Pittsburgh's going out west. So Indiana was east, and that's as far as I'd been. So my parents drove me to New England. They dropped me off in one day in this strange city in this college campus. I knew exactly no one. And I found out quite soon that very few people on campus shared my Christian faith as well. It was a radically different culture than the one I had grown up with. They even used different idioms and different vocabulary for things that I had. More importantly, they lived with very different moral and philosophical values than I had grown up with. And within a few months, I was even struggling academically. I already dropped one class just trying to survive the semester, and I wasn't sure I could face returning for a second semester. The loneliness. I was sinking in it. And I began to cry out to God to hear me. Would he hear my voice? They're asking, draw close to me, touch my lonely heart. And I remember very clearly to this day, 50 years ago or more, going out on the campus in the evening. It was a warm evening, and I just began to worship. I had memorized a lot of songs of praise and worship. I'm just going to worship you, God. I'm so desperate. I don't care who hears me. I'm not sure they like me anyway. I'm lonely here, and I need to hear and know and experience a connection with you. And while singing to Jesus, I experienced an unforgettable and life-changing moment. I felt Jesus near me, and he was reassuring me, and I experienced every one of the six feelings of connection that I just gave to you from the scriptures. All six in a few moments. I felt seen. I felt heard. I felt understood. I felt he's actually with me right now. He inhabits the praises of his people, and he was right there on top of me. I felt that he cared for me. And lastly, I really felt he enjoys me. It was what I call an Emmanuel moment when God was with me. I was deeply and profoundly touched that Jesus was with me. My feelings of loneliness dissipated. And sure enough, I returned for the second semester. I joined a campus prayer group, found a few other people following Jesus. And I found a family from a local church that was over a half an hour away. They would drive every Sunday morning and pick me up and take me to church. And they wouldn't take me back to campus. They would take me home and cook a meal for me. And then take me back so I could do my homework. I experienced a great healing of my loneliness. The one that's promised, and you'll hear more about in the next coming weeks from Psalm 68. God places lonely people in families. That's his business. You can look forward to that. He wants to be with you. He wants to make this family connect with you. Psalm 68. Next week, we'll take a second look at what causes loneliness to grow. Let's stand and sing with the band.